My name's Johnny, and I'm still alcoholic. I thought if I could have listened to my own tape there for that hour, I could have been healed by now. It just... You know, it's amazing. I've had the privilege of sponsoring a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's amazing how many people tell you that, God, I'm really afraid of step five. I tell them, have you written the fourth yet? Well, no, but I'm scared of five. I just think it's kind of hard for you to do anything if you haven't done it. If, by some strange hook or crook, you've established the first three steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I believe that the first three steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous are just basically decision steps. I believe you make a decision there to close the third step, to turn your will and your life over to the care of God if you understand Him. But the next step, Alcoholics Anonymous, is one of the, probably the only time that, or the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous you're asked to do anything except sit around and think about it. And that's when you have to really take some type of an action that requires more than just a simple process of thought. And it says when we made a searching and a fearless moral inventory. It says here on page 63 at the bottom, after we've taken that step, it says, next we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us have never attempted. Now, this is very dangerous to a lot of people, particularly people like me, and you get very many different reactions behind the fourth step. It said that though our decision was vital and a crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless followed at once by strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. Therefore, we started on a personal inventory. This was step four. Now, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't know about all this stuff. But one of the greatest things that I've learned about Alcoholics Anonymous is that if you sit around here long enough and try to pay attention to what goes on, and keep your eyes open, somebody will always prove to you what this program is really all about by their actions. It's just necessary for you to have to experiment on anything. I mean, all you got to do is just sit still long enough and somebody will experiment for you and prove to you whether your thought process is right or wrong. Whether it's, I don't have to do it, or I have to do it. I don't have to do it, or I have to do it. The group that I attend in California feel that if you don't have this inventory taken and this fifth step taken by your first step, your sponsor won't give you a cake. That's in the first year. They give you a whole year to get around to doing this. I, personally, I get them started as quick as I can. I mean, because I've always believed, like I told you before, and guys said, when do you want me to do this? When do you want to start getting well? I mean, if you don't know what's wrong with you, you can't find out what's wrong with you. I sat in a penitentiary when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and there was four guys in this institution, and I used to watch them all the time. And these four guys were people who'd been in the penitentiary, got sober in there in Alcoholics Anonymous, and went outside and got drunk and come back again. And I watched them all the time because somehow or other, even though I didn't realize it at that time, I knew that this was a very vital thing, that my life was hanging on a thread here because, you know, I had just returned from insanity and death. And so I realized it was a very critical thing. I watched these people. And one day I was sitting in a meeting on Sunday. I said, back where I was, well, I leaned up against the wall trying to be cool. You know, if I'd had a hat, I'd had it on backwards. But that was before you were hip, when you wore your hat with the bill out. But I was sitting back there, and I'm watching these three guys, and a guy came in on a panel with that meeting we had, and he asked a question. He said, I'd like to ask some questions to people here. And he said, I want to know how many of you people have tried Alcoholics Anonymous before and failed and came back. And I watched these guys, and their hands went, all four of them, they're kind of proud. They looked around and see who was watching them, you know, like the big badge of honor to blow it, you know what I mean? And it was like some of these people who make heroes out of slippers. Oh, you wonderful thing. Leave that old fool along over there. He's been sober a while, but let me... Anyhow, he asked another question. He said, I want to know how many of you people wrote your fourth and fifth step in its entirety. And not one of those hands went up. Not one. Not one of the four. And it wasn't very much longer after that that I started to write my inventory. And it's not a... I don't think that's cute. I know some people do, but I don't think children in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous to disrupt meetings are cute. I think children belong where they belong, but not in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous where they disrupt them. But we love you. I knew it. And I tell you, I got run out of San Jose last week because I was talking too much about Alcoholics Anonymous. This program of Alcoholics Anonymous is a very, very debilitating thing. When I started to write my inventory, I started to put things down there that I had never told my therapist. I started to write things down there that I never said anything about on a psychiatrist's couch. I put things down there that I had thought about and tried to hide all my life. And by the time I got to the point where I couldn't stand myself, where I was afraid to even shave myself anymore because of the madness that was about me, I had to do something about it. And what I have come to understand what that was is that I was absolutely and totally dying from a disease called alcoholism. And I didn't know it was being an untreated illness. Now, I had been going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd been doing a lot of things in meetings. I'd been picking up ashtrays, and I'd been picking up cups, and I'd been smiling at people from time to time. But I did not have any idea that that's all I was doing was sitting there, but I didn't have any idea that I was not treating my alcoholism. The treatment of alcoholism is a very serious thing, and you do not treat meetings of alcoholism by just showing up here. All you're doing is just showing up. The disease of alcoholism, as I understand it, is only settled by some type of a spiritual experience, some type of a spiritual awakening within yourself, which I said before. And when I wrote my inventory, I was dangerous. When I got my inventory written, I wrote it. I don't know how long I wrote it or who I wrote it to or what I wrote about, really, but I do know that it was terrible. I was just almost insane. Because I did a lot of things before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't just show up here because my wristwatch went backwards or I took a little light wine at my high school prom. You know, I had committed just about every crime against man and nature that there was to commit before I got here. And I'd paid the price for it because I'd been literally driven insane and I was dead on arrival at my last time out of the Los Angeles County Jail. So I didn't come here in Alcoholics Anonymous because I had a little trouble in my high school class, or because Mama was going to throw me out of the house if I didn't do something about my drinking. And so when I started to write this inventory, it was a debilitating thing. It's almost like therapy. You know, you get so deep into that therapy sometimes, you get so far into your head about all the crap that you've done, you got to have something to set you free. You know what I mean? Medication seems to be a good thing. But I wasn't at that point. I was at the point that most alcoholics of my type enter into when we get so sick and tired of ourselves and so full of ourselves we can't stand ourselves anymore. We either have to do something about it or blow our brains out or take a drink. For me, thank God, I was locked up in a place where I couldn't get anything sharp or I couldn't get a drink at that time. So I did the only thing that people like me could do. I took this nonsense that I had and I walked around the corner and knocked on a man's door and sat down and started to tell him about me. I started to read what was written in this inventory. And somewhere during the presentation of this fifth step to this man, probably the greatest single event that's ever happened to me in my life happened to me. Bar none. I don't put anything above it. I don't put anything around it. It's the greatest single event that's ever happened in my life. You see, I don't believe that coming to Alcoholics Anonymous is the greatest single event that's ever happened to me in my life. And I don't believe that getting sober is the greatest single event that ever happened to me in my life, because I was sober a lot of times before I got here. I don't believe that my children being born or my grandchildren being born for the good life of mine today is the greatest single thing that's ever happened to me in my life. The greatest single thing that ever happened to me in my life happened to me when I was doing this fifth step with this man. I heard myself say to that man that I was an alcoholic. And as far as I can perceive that in my own case, that's the first step in recovery. I admitted to my innermost self at that day. And from that moment to this moment, there's never been a doubt in my mind what's wrong with me. Me. I'm an alcoholic and I suffer from a disease called alcoholism. From that moment to this moment, I have never been an alcoholic and anything. I never was and anything anyhow. I was just something, but I wasn't this other one. And everything in this program of recovery called Alcoholics Anonymous is something that I just wanted to do and had to do and knew I had to do it. Had to do it. It's just a thing. I mean, it's a tremendous thing that at the age of 27 years old, when you've died and gone insane and blew everything in the world that you'd ever been given, the talent that God gave you, everything that you gave you, you come to a point in your life and through this terrible, debilitating thing, all your life you've been searching for this tremendous answer of, my God, what's wrong with me? Why do I keep ending up like this all the time, for Christ's sake? What's wrong with me? It's the Alcoholics theme song. Jesus Christ, what's wrong? I don't know. That's hard to say. So we have a chapter that says, well, we try everything to control and enjoy our drinking. We drink beer only. We drink wine. We read health farms and sanitariums. People do that after they come to AA. They take physical exercise. Read spiritual books. Make a spiritual breakthrough. Go to health farms and sanitariums. We've been recently ad infinitum, says my sponsor says you were ad infinitum, whatever that was. I discovered what was wrong with me sitting down doing this fifth step. I discovered I had this terrible, debilitating disease, and I was going to die or go nuts if I didn't do it. I had to. It's the most tremendous thing I've ever known. There was no big boom. You know, I mean, I remember getting up and walking out the door that day, and the guy said to me, Jesus, Johnny, didn't you ever do anything decent in your entire life? I couldn't think of a thing. I couldn't think of a thing in my life as I walked out that door, because I walked over to sit underneath the tree that day and thought about it. I couldn't think of a single unselfish act that I had ever committed in my entire life. I had never one time in my life ever thought about somebody else before me. Ever. It took me a long time to understand that that is the glaring killer instinct of an alcoholic of my type, the selfishness and self-centeredness. That's the way I lived my entire lifetime before I got here and didn't know it. I didn't know I was living that way. I mean, it was as natural to me as breathing in and out to be selfish and self-centered. I wasn't interested in the world or the people about me. I was interested in me. No wonder I was caught into this trap of disillusionment and despair and needed a drink. And once I took a drink, I'm gone again. I didn't understand what was going on. I didn't know I had this phenomenon of craving once I took a drink. I didn't know that I was drinking to satisfy a craving which beyond all human help and understand. I didn't know that because I didn't know what was wrong with me, for Christ's sake. I discovered in that thing that this is not an alcohol problem. This is not about taking drugs. This is about a spiritual soul sickness, a disease of such proportion that nobody's ever been able to figure out where it came from. Nobody has ever been, all the geniuses in all the years, the 4,000 years that's been recorded history of alcoholism, nobody ever understood or has ever been able to come up with the reason why my body does not react to alcohol the way other people's body reacts to it. That this terrible disease of mine, alcoholism, kills more people than anything that's been known to man, and has the exact same proportions as cancer. It's amazing. The opposite thing between this and cancer is this, is that when you have cancer, you have a tumor, and the body feeds the tumor. Now, the mind knows it has cancer. The body doesn't. It just feeds it. And it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and finally you die from it. Because malignant, you die. That's what it does. Alcoholism is almost in a reverse situation in this thing. The body knows it has it, but the mind says it doesn't. I mean, you ever remember your first drink? Blah! I don't want that in me, the body's saying. Mind says, but oh, how it would make you feel. Oh, I'll try it again. Blah! I mean, what is that? The body is rejecting this thing. The mind says, hold it! Good, boy. That's what the mind says. Mind. That's where the first drink is. But I can't know that I'm caught in this trap if I don't know what's wrong with me. If I think the only problem I have is a drinky poo every now and then, and so I get out of control every once in a while, end up with a 502, or in the treatment center one more time. If that's the only problem I have, then all I have to do is put this aside. But if I have this terrible killer illness, that being sober, being without liquid in my system, or spirit within my system, isn't it amazing that they call alcohol a spirit? Why would we have to have spirit put in when we have spirit within? The spirit within is trying to get out, so we put a spirit in to kill the spirit within. Oh, how do you like that one for simplicity? But that's the way it works. I don't understand. I didn't understand that, but I understand it today. Thank God I understood that. Thank God I come to understand the very nature of my illness, that I have this terrible malady, that I have to do what this program of recovery says to do, and the people who have gone before me do, and the people who are staying sober before me do. You ask anybody who's been sober any length of time, and they will all tell you the same course of action that they take to obtain this degree of stability so the mind doesn't trick them into taking a drink. That's what it's all about. To get rid of me long enough. I can sit around in my room, spiritual as I am, and as close to God as I am, and read all sorts of spiritual, intoxicating books, and get thirstier, and thirstier, and thirstier, and thirstier, and thirstier. Because I know what takes the big hurt away that quick. All I got to do, pick this up and drink it. And I don't care how much knowledge I have learned about the crippling effect of alcohol on my system. If I don't do something to keep a permanent bridge between me and that first drink, I'm going to drink again. Because I know, even in the back of my head today, after 36 years of sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and doing what I'm asked to do here, I do know today, way in the back of my mind, what takes the big hurt away. Alcohol will still work in my life. Still work. You ever been, it's the time of the year when you go out to some of these Christmas parties and company parties. And have any of you, how many people in this room have ever mistakenly put one of those malt balls or put a drink of alcohol in their mouth since they've been sober? Lots of you, huh? What did you do with it? Huh? Did you get a little tingling feeling, though? I did. That proves to me alcohol works. Feel funny about it. God damn. I mean, I went into the office one day. I'm in the office, you know how you are. It's Christmas time, you walk by the old girl's desk, you got candy. Grab one of them things. Oh! Spit right on her desk. She said, what's the matter with you? I said, God, what is that? She said, it's a rum ball. I said, oh, shit. Fast, what? I took a bite of rum ball. She said, how many did you eat? I said, I didn't even eat that one. I threw it away. He said, well, thank God. He said, why? He said, if you had to sit down and feasted at her desk, it would have been a different story. So you see, I hear people in Alcoholics Anonymous all the time. I go to a lot of meetings, so I hear a lot of things. You know, if you go to meetings, you hear a lot of things. You listen. I mean, if you're busy, in AA meetings, you know, like getting coffee and being cute, whatever it is, you don't hear nothing. I mean, you're just listening. I mean, you're trying to be showed up there. But if you go to meetings, sit around and listen, you hear that thing. I hear people say all the time, alcohol just quit working in my life. My answer to that is, what the hell are you doing here? If alcohol don't work, what are you doing here? If alcohol don't work, what's the reason for this inventory and this humiliating fifth step? Well, you got to admit to God and somebody else exact nature wrong. What's the business of this of doing all this crap and talking to people you don't even like? What's the reason for all this nonsense? If alcohol doesn't work anymore, then you have to worry about drinking it. I mean, well, it don't work. I don't think I'll drink it anymore. Work back here. And the reason that is, I believe this, is that you can forget the memory of pain very shortly for a moment's pleasure. For a moment's relief, we can forget the agony of a lifetime. And if you don't believe that, no woman would ever have her second child. That's how simple it is. Really, that's kind of an abstract thing, but that's just basically what we're talking about. The humiliation and the degradation and the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization of yesterday is but a memory. But a memory is gone. And I've almost forgotten what brought it about. And if I am not hanging around people like you and keeping a constant effort into these program of recovery and the memory of new people in my life solidifying the idea of what happens to me when I drink, I'll forget it. And then I'll hang out with somebody. And the book says, in the doctor's opinion, I become restless and irritable and discontent. Unless I can have a few drinks, which I see other people taking with impunity. And by this time, I have already thought myself into a state of unreasonableness when just the phase I was going through anyhow. You know, 30-some years, I may not have been an alcoholic anyhow. Probably a dope fiend. I'll just drink. You know, and I don't believe the first drink is the thought process. I believe the first drink is a reaction. I believe that for me to drink, all I'd have to do is be in the wrong place at the wrong time in the wrong set of circumstances, and somebody hand me a drink, and all the years of sobriety's gone. Could I take it? Because I do know that since I've been sober, there have been times when I have been so upset with myself or the situations that I have created or the things around me, or I have felt so guilty about the things that I've done, or whatever it may be, that it drove me into that simple fact that I was just absolutely and totally insane, and if I was in the wrong place, somebody handed me a drink, I'd have probably taken it. Just the way I take a drink of water when my throat gets dry. Automatically reach for something. And so I admitted to my innermost self I was alcoholic that day. And I went out and sat down underneath this tree. And for the first time in my life, probably, it was about Easter time, when there's new life springing up all around you. And we were up in the mountains in this penitentiary, and I was sitting out looking at all these things. And the flowers were blooming, and the birds were singing. And I was 29 years old. And that's probably the first time in my life I had ever experienced those type of things. Now, I don't know whether that's a spiritual experience or what that is. I think it's just an awakening. That's what I believe. The sad part about this fifth step is so many people make such a big deal out of it. Such a big deal, they think that's the end of it. Now that I know what's wrong with me, and now that I have explained to people what's wrong with me, I just go about my business. Wrong, 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 wrong. What happens now is you have to repair the damage of the past. from now on, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous gets real, real tough. Because you ain't talking about one person and another person. Now you got to go out and do something. So many people get stuck right here. Right here. This is where we lose a lot of people to other outside agencies. Not being funny, this is a deadly thing. Right here. It's because now I know all this crap about me as much as I knew about me in therapy, maybe, and more. So now I know all this stuff. What do I do now? Well, you hear people all the time say, well, I just got all bets. I went back and wrote another inventory. Yep, another inventory. Another fifth step. Yep, another inventory. Another fifth step. What do you think about that? And I said, God, the goddamn people who sell those papers must just love you. And pencils and stationery stores must just can't wait. You must have an open line down there or something, line of credit. Wow, you don't think that's good? Nope, I don't. He said, why not? I said, it's awful easy to go back and redo something than it is to go forward into something you don't know. To step out there in uncharted ground is not something that every alcoholic I ever met is looking forward to, I'll tell you that. Well, I think I'll go over there and tell them people I sold $10,000 from them. I'm willing to pay it back. Think about that, guy. Yo, I just can't hardly wait to get that done tomorrow. Just. So what do we do? Ha! I'll go back and write an inventory. Another. I think I'll write another inventory. Think about that. You're going to take that rather fifth step. You need to run into, if you're lucky, you go to some of these group therapy sessions that they call AA meetings. You run into one of the gurus who have been sober about 15 days back there. Maybe 2 years now. You know, you can always spot them. When I was in that position, I got lucky. I wanted to kill myself. What'd you do? Luckily, my friend introduced me to their therapist. Or I found out that I was in conflict with my inner child. And you may talk as funny, but a lot of alcoholics die right there. Alcoholics of my type are right there at the turning point again. And for me to break off from this program of recovery when I've just scratched the surface and found out what's wrong with me, I have not taken the steps necessary to repair the things that have driven me back to the bottle time and time and time again, the nightmares of my past. So for me to bounce off and go back and rehash this crap again, I'm doing the same thing. You might as well just stay here and keep writing inventories. You might as well. I mean, because that's all therapy is. Let me think more about that. Oh, I can't stand that. Oh, that's better. Thanks, doctor. That's all it is. Self-help? No. Selflessness is what our program is all about. Getting rid of me. Getting rid of the things that are driving me crazy. Getting rid of the nightmares of my past. Now, I can't do that just because I know about them. I've always known about them. How do you think I wrote them down on a piece of paper if I didn't know about them? I mean, they're not spiritual breakthroughs, for Christ's sake, that I thought about one day when I had nothing better to do. I knew all about this stuff. It's what drove me crazy when it was described to me in a courtroom. My brain snapped. I know about all this stuff. The little itty-bitty details and stuff, taking care of my fifth step. See, it said in the book that we went back to our life. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. Now about sex. It's on page 69. They had a lot of foresight here, I'll tell you about. You don't talk much about sex in Alcoholics Anonymous. Talk a lot about relationships. I have a new, I was telling them last night that I have a new answering machine things. You know, you have got these automatic secretary things you can answer now. You call up my house and voice comes on and says, this is Johnny Harris. If you want to talk about alcoholism, press 1. If you want to talk about the recovery from such, press 2. If you want to talk about relationships, hang up. It It says down here on the bottom of page 69, God alone can judge our sex situation. You know. And yet I hear alcoholics all the time trying to help each other with their relationship problems. I mean, I don't know anything about it. I'm not very good at it. Selfish, self-centered people aren't very good at relationship problems. They're just not. I mean, we're too deeply into ourselves most of the time. And so somehow or other, for anything to work continually for a basis between me and another human being, whether it's a female or a male, between Earl and I, or my sponsor and I, we have to have some type of selflessness there. There has to be some type of a give-and-take situation there. And so I have to establish some type of relationship with the human being, and what better than somebody who's been sober a while and knows what, you know, in steps in chapter 6, you know, it tells more about getting into action. Isn't it amazing that there's this chapter in this book, chapter 6, says into action? I've looked all the way through here, and I keep looking for a chapter into thinking. I could really get into that. You know what I mean? Anytime you get into deep psychological thoughts, go into the closet and take your pistol with you. It really helps a great deal. Gives you kind of comfort. You rub the barrel on your cheek, back and forth, on your forehead, kind of. You get great spiritual breakthroughs. But once in a while, you just can't hardly wait to see how it tastes. I get another kick. I get, you know, just a lot of things that they talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous. That, you know, you hear a lot of things, and people seem to think that, you know, that the only way you can stay sober now is to go to dances. I mean, they think an AA meeting is just something to keep them occupied till the music starts. And so our rule should not to avoid places where there is drinking if we have a legitimate reason for being there. I also believe that being completely lost in it has not, I'm not against drink, against dancing. I just, particularly down here in the South, you know, I mean, in the Baptist country, them people, you know, they don't think you should be dancing. They think you're probably trying to make love standing up or something. I don't know what it is. I don't really know what it is, but it's, I think that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life depends on my being alert at all times and the thing that's going to kill me. Now, I can't do anything about the thing that's killing me if I don't know what's going on in my life. I have been through about all the fourth and fifth step I can be through. If you ain't been there, there's not much I can do for you. But if you haven't been there, I suggest that you get with it right away. Another thing that I want to say about the fourth and fifth step. It seems to me today that a lot of people who are coming out of these treatment facilities have been given a line of crap in there. They think, well, they've taken this inventory and they've done all this stuff in there, and they come out 30 days later with 3 or 4 years equivalent of sobriety. I think the inventory and the fifth step should be taken and given freely and without threat of anything. I think everything in Alcoholics Anonymous should be done just because you feel you have to do it for sobriety and for sobriety alone. Not because some counselor who's getting paid thinks you ought to, but because that's part of some program that you paid money to go sit into with some authority to tell you. I think that the only reason you should do any of these things in Alcoholics Anonymous is to stay sober. That's what I believe. I believe sobriety is the key to the whole ballgame. Kind of hard to be sober if you're not sober. Another spiritual breakthrough. But that's really what it basically is all about. You start, when I get a newcomer, I say to him, he says, did you hear the phone? Did you hear it, Earl? Oh, shit. I did. Anybody else hear the phone? Thanks, Johnny. Where was I? Where the phone rang. Huh? You go look through your notes and get back to work. Where was I? Oh. Well, it's like all spiritual breakthrough with alcoholics is just a fleeting thing. Oh. It was here a while ago. But I really believe, my first thing I tell people that I sponsor with them, I said, you know, I tell them, after they've been sober a while, it depends on whether they're slippers or whatever they are, or just new people in Alcoholics Anonymous, who've never been here before, and first thing I tell them is you got to get into these steps right away. You know, I tell them, you know, a period of time, and look at them, and I say, well, you better start writing on your fourth step. And then they say, well, I'm on my fourth step. I said, fine. Well, when are we going to take my fifth? I said, I'll tell you. Keep them kind of on. Three times a week, they, I'm writing. Good. When are we going to take my fifth step? Well, I'll tell you. Just calm and quiet and wonderful. They're just, God, he's going to say it someday. And so someday I'll walk up to them on a Monday night and I say, Thursday, after the meeting, down by the bay, we're going to go sit on a bench and I'm going to listen to your fifth step. Oh! The first thing I ever say to them, when they get down, before I spend an hour or however long it takes, 10 o'clock at night on, whenever it was, I'll say to them, why do you want to do this? Why do you want to do this? And it seemed like the people I get, because most of them are losers anyhow. I mean, they've tried all this other crap. None of it seems to work. Invariably, the thing that I get that really makes my evening a little easier, I would, after they say this, if they give me this answer, I could sit there till dawn and listen to them. I just want to stay sober. Well, because it says to do it, or I think I ought to do it, or Willie's doing it, or Billy's. I just love when they tell me, I just want to stay sober. Because that's all I do. I just want to stay sober today. That's all. Just, today is my day. This is my day. I don't got any yesterdays or no tomorrows. This is it. I can't even guarantee you that I'm going to make it back to the room tonight. I can't guarantee I'm going to make it through lunch. I can't guarantee I'm going to make it anywhere. But I do know this. That I want to stay sober. That's all. Only chance I got. The only chance I've got of being a father, of being a grandfather, of being a good employee, of being a good employer, of being a good citizen in the world, or being a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous is if I stay sober. I can't stay sober. That's the point I'm trying to get across. I can't stay sober. I can't drink and live. And of myself, I can't keep from drinking. So how come I'm sober 36 years? Very simple. I have found a design for living. Not a workbench or a chore. I have found a delightful design for living that puts me in a place where it is necessary for me to have to drink. That all started when I discovered what was wrong with me, that I had this disease, killer disease called alcoholism, not alcohol, a disease called alcoholism, and I was smack dab in the solution. That all I had to do was these things, and I wouldn't have to drink no more. Does this mean I'm going to be a perfect human being? Does this mean I'm going to rise into the heights and be one of God's chosen people? It's just going to mean that I'm going to be one of those rare, rare things in the history of mankind. Call a sober alcoholic who doesn't drink alcohol anymore and lives with some degree of comfort. That's what I found here. And that's as much as I know about the fourth and fifth step. And Al has snuck some more of these sneaky things in here on you people. So here we go. How many times do you do each step? Every day of my life. Well, this is an absolute fact. Every day of my life, I do the third step prayer, the sixth and seventh step prayer, and the 10th, 11th, and 12th step before I ever have a cup of coffee. It's right here in this book. Page 62 is the third step prayer. The first two paragraphs on page 76 are the sixth and seventh step prayer. And on page 84 of our book, it says this thought brings us to step 10. I read all the way through the rest of that chapter. And then I read the last paragraph of A Vision for You. And somehow or other, I'm in some type of condition to start my day. Now, the rest of these steps, I go through them all the time. I go through them with the people I sponsor. When I have somebody that I listen to as the fifth step, I share some of my fifth step with them. Kind of takes the edge off. You find out there's somebody in the world sicker than they are. I mean, you ever wonder, that's one of the funniest things I ever heard about. You know, amazing, people said, I didn't write my inventory, I just took my fifth step the way it was. And I said, that's fine. I don't know how you are, but there's something that happens between me and my right hand. It just flows out here and comes out here. And when it gets to that paper, it's entirely different than what it was up here. I mean, it's like goes some through transformation of thought process. You know what I mean? It's like that beautiful blue-eyed blonde that I was with in Norfolk has turned to a little helpless sheep in Montana when it got down to the paper. Not really true. But that is an illustration on how my mind can trick me. And just that quick. Just my mind is not my friend. It really isn't. I look at my face in the mirror, it's almost as like, how am I going to trick you today, slick? it really not. I mean, I've told you before that my mind has never had anybody else's concern in it. Ever. Just not filled with thoughts of other folks. Filled with thoughts of me and mine and what I want, how I need. I'm like them little egos with sticks on them, you know. So that's it. That's the way I take these steps. I do those steps. I read it. It's in the book. It's in the book. They're here. Basically, Alcoholics Anonymous, and the third step and the sixth and seventh step are prayers. Now we have another one. Is what your view on the idea that all you have to do is don't drink and go to meetings? Well, that's a good start. Don't drink and go to meetings. That is a great start. But I know what I've told you before, but I've been trying to tell you for the last couple of hours that all that will do for a guy like me is make me tired of the meetings and make my life so damned unbearable that I can't stand it. When I was doing this, when I was new, when all I did was not drink, I was sober, I was coming to meetings, and I picked up ashtrays. I took my fifth step. It's a good start. But it's like, I don't know who it was, maybe Clancy who did this one time. But Alcoholics Anonymous is the last house on the block, whether you know it or not. And if you have options, you won't even be near the block that it's on, for Christ's sake. And a lot of people think that they come here and they don't drink and they're in the house. No, they're not. Hell, they're not even on the sidewalk yet in the house. When you drink, you don't quit drinking. All you do is get on the porch. But that doesn't mean you're in there sitting by the fireplace and being warm. That just means you're standing on the porch. You go out and stand outside out there. See how warm you are. I know there's something going on in there. I'm not quite sure what it is. But they're laughing and giggling, and I'm standing out here colder than hell. Same idea. You got to come in. You got to come in. It's awful hard to get out of something you're in. Real easy to get off of something you're on. That's the treatment centers. They get you off of stuff you're on. Awful hard to get out of Alcoholics Anonymous once you get in. Once, who was it? Great orator, great man, Martin Luther King. He said in one of his stirring speeches, "I have been to the top of the mountain and I have looked at paradise. I ain't going back in the valley." That's what happens here in Alcoholics Anonymous. When you come to believe, when you come to believe that this is the answer for my problem, and this is the solution for what's been killing me all my life, this is a solution that's killed thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people after they've come here. This is the solution, because they can't seem to buy this. They're so wrapped up in that word alcohol. I ain't drinking. You don't have to tell me that, pal. Nothing's changed either. That's what kills you. Once you've been here, once you've had this thing, once you've experienced the great joy of life, it's something that you want over and over and over. A guy like Earl's here 41 years, for Christ's sake. If this wasn't best. Why do you think I've been here 36 years? If this ain't better not to run in the streets and being hip.
Running broke, being that dope, and being tough, man.
This is better. This is much better. If it wasn't, maybe Gene would come down from Chicago and light you with his whatever it is that you have from Chicago. I tried real hard. Gene flew down, tried to make connection on my flight to Dallas yesterday. He wasn't there, and I told him, close the door. Close the door. Close the door. God, they closed the door. He made them open it. Here he comes. You have a seat beside you? Yeah. Put down my paper. You ever just want to read the support page? But I love you. Yeah. What is your experience with multiple sponsors? I don't have any. I don't have any experience with multiple sponsors. I have one. I've only had one. One. The first one I had would still be my sponsor if he lived. I had an old man who was like a father to me, named Chuck. He wasn't my sponsor. He only sponsored one man. And that guy is now my sponsor. But I've come to understand something, why that's necessary for some people. If I asked all these people in this row the same question, I would get five different answers. And if I kept going down the row far enough, I would get the answer that would suit my little psyche. I would get the answer that I wanted in the first place. But I have to go through the motions of acting like I'm really interested in some other point of view but my own. So I have to keep asking different people till I find my own point of view.
I think I'll try that. Thank you.
You guys don't know what the hell you're talking about. He's has a spiritual breakthrough. Such as a necessity. You ask enough questions around here, you'll get the right answer. It may be your death sentence, but you'll get the right answer. Because there's a number of people sitting around here ain't going to do a goddamn thing but sit around and execute people. Sorry. Clancy calls them the outriders of death. They just circle AA meetings. Circle. I've been sober 10 years, for Christ's sakes. I ain't never taken no goddamned inventory and ain't going to. Newcomer's sitting there saying, yeah.
Yes.
You've been sober
yes.
6 years. You told me I got to take an ambulance car. This guy's been sober 10 years.
What's
it takes you a long time to figure out an answer for that. All you got to do is look at him and say, if that's what you want to be when you're 10 years sober, be my guest. If you make it. But they just circle. Alcoholics Anonymous. They hang out in discussion meetings where they can be heard with their philosophical nonsense. And they suck these little alcoholics out here and execute them. But they don't die. They just suck around out here. And they say, hey, nothing in that book. You know what this book says? I'm going to read you something. Most alcoholics, want to know, I want to way out of this dilemma. Okay? This is it. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. And then you go sit in some of these discussion groups where these idiots sit around and think they're group therapy sessions and talk about their problems. My problem is this. I had a bad day. Couldn't put gas in my car. You never stop to think. You ought to be grateful you got a goddamn car. It's amazing. You know, I ain't never been to a discussion meeting where I heard anything. You know why? I'm always trying to figure out what I'm going to say when it's my turn. True. And when I sit down or get through, I'm always worried about what I didn't say. And if they don't call on me, I'm pissed off all night. Just so it's really necessary for me to listen. But I have to go listen to the music of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want people to talk to me about this, how they recovered from what they're doing here. What are you doing? How have you come? How have you built that bridge from a newcomer to you from an understanding? How do I get from total depression and chaos to some area of sunshine in my life? How do I walk and be warmed in the sun? What do I do? How do I get into the fellowship of the Spirit? I don't want to hear about goddamn boss today and my woman, my man, and my kids not acting correctly. I just don't seem to understand what's going on. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, get sober, not all this crap. That's what you hear. And the other thing you hear in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's all one big disease, you know. You know the guy who started that? Died on the treatment center with only one van. Take them all down there. Dump them in there. Like Alcoholics Anonymous. How does that make you feel? How does that make you feel to think of some genius who's making money off of people suffering? Think you, this is a place to dump folks. How does it make you feel to think that you're an AA meeting in some kind of a damn dump ground? Some junkyard that people discard here because they haven't got any way to entertain them that evening. How does that make you feel? Spiritual? Doesn't make me feel spiritual. Doesn't make me feel spiritual to think your people sitting in Alcoholics Anonymous got no business being here. Not at all. We're not the panacea for all things. Doesn't make me feel spiritual. Saddens me. Because if you're not alcoholic, you'll never understand what we do here. I don't care how much spiritual breakthrough you got. If you're not an alcoholic, for God's sake, find some place where you can find help. The 12 steps are available to everybody with every type of a program, but Alcoholics Anonymous is one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic to get them to take action they don't believe in, to do things. Not a panacea for all things. We don't do anybody any favors by letting, just come in here and be a part of our deal. We're not doing anybody a favor doing it to them. We're doing them more harm than good. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about, being sober and one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic to get them to take actions they don't believe in. These things, that are outlined in this book, the things that I've been talking about, are not things we normally do. Alcoholics just don't run around surrendering on every street corner out there. Just can't wait to surrender tomorrow. Just can't wait to get over there and sweep that damn floor on Saturday night. I just can't wait to call up that sponsor and have him call me a crap head. I just can't wait. I don't get up in the morning and say, oh, God. Oh, another day. Now I got to get, go to the, I'll tell you, if it wasn't for some people here, it wouldn't have been a great delight for me to get up at 4 o'clock yesterday morning, drive an hour to the airport, get on an airplane, and fly to Dallas, see Gene come aboard, fly here to wherever we're at, have him say we're in Richmond. We drive by Richmond. He says, that's it. I haven't seen it since. And go down and have an overpriced dinner. Of course, I didn't pay for it, so it didn't bother me. But it's not my idea of a weekend, particularly when they're having football playoffs. But if it wasn't for the people that I knew I would see when I got here, I wouldn't even want to come. Isn't that amazing? I do a lot of things I don't want to do. But a lot of places I'd rather be than wherever we're at. Really, I really would. I mean, just, I mean, I really, you know, it's, that's the truth. I do a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous I don't want to do. When I did what I want to do all the time, you know what happened to me? 27 years old, I ended up crawling around a cell in solitary confinement, drifting in and out of total insanity. That's my way, baby. And do it my way? Yes. I just can't hardly wait for you to get your brain exploding. My way don't work. My way never worked, never will work, never works. So I have to come here and find out if it will work. Now, unless you have any more questions, Al, I haven't got anything more to say, and I'm getting hungry, so let's have a little lunch break.